Wherever infinite waste students meet, they should take opportunity of having a meditation or two or three. And with only one thought in mind, and that is the realization of Christ. Some of you have been in classes and heard me say that the day is coming when there will be something like a ring around the world. Something like an influence circling the globe. It will be the Christ Spirit, but it will be available to every individual on the face of the globe, no matter who he might be, where, or under what circumstance, merely by reaching out in consciousness. In other words, a person might be walking along the street and in need of direction, or somebody may be falling out of an airplane, or a ship sinking at sea, or a businessman concerned with his business problem, and merely by opening consciousness, merely by turning with that opening ear, find the inflow of that which is necessary at the moment. Whether it is guidance, direction, wisdom, protection, safety, security, or supply. This will be the fulfillment of the Master's mission on earth. The revelation of the kingdom of God on earth. So that the government will be upon its shoulder, so that no one will have personal responsibility. Each one, regardless of the name or nature of their work, may turn to it and find it fulfilling itself as your or my or his or her individual life. Now, that will in no wise make of this a Pollyanna world. This will in no wise lessen our responsibility as individuals. It will merely give us access to an infinite source of wisdom, strength, guidance, healing power. We still, as individuals, will live our experiences as engineers, or builders, or businessmen, or artists, or whatnot. But it will be with more than just our human ability. It will be with that divine ability, that spiritual, unlimited ability, to bring it forth fruitfully. Now, this spirit always has circled the globe. It is an influence. It is a presence and a power. And the Master says it was before Abraham was. It was from everlasting to everlasting. And it will never leave us nor forsake us. It is an established being, power, presence. It was not available except in a very limited degree to mankind before the Master. Because in those few places where it was known, and those few individuals who had received the light, there was not the means at hand to convey it to an illiterate and uncultured mass of humanity, such as existed in India, China, and even across into the Hebrew lands. Remember that whatever light has dawned in individual consciousness has more or less remained there, except for the sharing of it with a few people in monasteries or ashramas or convents. Because of the impossible feat of conveying it to a public with no education, no culture, no developed faculties, and that it is only since the advent of the printing press that even cultural light, education, music, art, has been able to reach the mass mind. And it is only in those few hundred years that a preparation has been set up for the ability to apprehend and comprehend spiritual light. These things seem to go together, the letter of truth and the spirit of truth. And the less literate a person is, the more blind faith they can develop. But on the other hand, it would seem that the more of education or culture they have developed, the greater capacity they have for spiritual insight. Not blind faith, but spiritual insight. The two seem to go together. Now, the Master revealed the kingdom of God on earth. He revealed that it is on earth. Isaiah prophesied it's coming. But the Master revealed that the kingdom is come on earth, that the government is upon its shoulder, that there is this divine influence which he called the Father within, which Paul later called the Christ within. That it has existence. My saying that it is as if it were a ring around the world, you understand to be symbolic, not actual. Because its actual place is within our consciousness. It is only in the sense that whether we would be at sea, or in the air, or on land, or down below, or whether we would be on the African continent, or the North American, or South American, wherever we might be, there it is. In that sense, then, it's around the globe. Wherever we would be, up or down, in or out, there it is. But actually, this Christ, this Spirit of God, is an activity within our own consciousness, and we do not reach out around the world for it. We reach within to our own being. Only remember that that can be done wherever we are. And another reason for saying it is as if it were a ring around the world is to bring forth its availability, not only to us, not only to truth students, not only to students of spiritual wisdom, but to all mankind, wherever he may be and under whatever circumstance, even in the deepest salt mine in Siberia. And all that we are doing, all that the Master did, was reveal this omnipresence wherever men may be. It is for this reason that he would engage in no temporal activity, such as heading an army to fight Rome. Because he understood that in the last analysis, even though you gain your economic or your political freedom, you still are not free until you have attained your freedom through Christ, through the Spirit of God in man. Because temporal freedoms can be lost. Dictators can replace republics. Economic chaos can come even to the great British Empire or the American Republic. All of these things can happen. But nothing can happen. Nothing ever can happen to interfere with the spiritual activity of the Christ in consciousness appearing as loaves and fishes or gold in the fish's mouth or any other form of good, a cloud by day, a pillar of fire by night, or any other form of good necessary to our unfoldment. Now, we, in the infinite way, are recognizing that the prophecy of Isaiah as to the coming of the Christ and the nature of the Christ as he revealed it actually was fulfilled in the experience of the Master Christ Jesus. And for 300 years, this Christ was in a good measure demonstrated by disciples, by apostles, traveling preachers. In great measure, they were able to prove healings, supply, protection, until, of course, it was taken out of the hands of the individual and again made a mass and vicarious experience of church. Now, it must be clear to you that if we were to sign a register of membership with each other, that in that very degree, we would lose some measure of the Christ that we have already attained. Because the mere signing of the register of membership, each one would give up some of his own access to the Christ and say, oh, isn't that nice? We're a group of us. Or we have someone at the head of us with a little more understanding than we have, and we would just about settle back some degrees by virtue of having signed that register. Oh, now we're united. Now we're a group. And there would be an interdependence rather than an independence and a complete reliance on this thing within our own being. In the same way that we have this feeling of peace and joy when we are together, and yet each one has it definitely in consciousness, that the moment will come when we will go out of that door, and then each one will be on his own, that is, on his own realization and at-one-ment, or realization of at-one-ment, with that Christ. They will then not have the rest of this room joining them, either in meditation or in support, nor the help of one who may have gone a step ahead or a day sooner. And so each one goes out with a feeling, ah, I and my Father are one, and now I have to stand in that revelation which has been given me. I must learn continually to turn and contact or touch that divine essence within my being. And you see that as we would do that, we would be a light unto the world. We would show forth this glory of God in improved harmonies of experience. And thereby others would come into the light. But at any time in our history that anyone came together and said, let us sign a register. In that moment, the decline would set in, and it would not be too many years before each one would be looking to the teacher or leader or whatever title he or she happened to acquire, and again, the thing would be lost. Now, I speak of this because I want to sum up today this revelation, this prophecy and revelation, this prophecy of the coming and of the nature of the Christ, because it must be clear to us what the nature is so that we understand its function. Now, and incidentally, when this is through this morning, I don't know that there's anything left for the rest of the week. And I mean it seriously, because it is all summed up. It may be that some questions will come up, but this will sum up that which evidently has been given us for this week's work. The nature and availability of the Christ. So let me read from Isaiah again. Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. In that name, Emmanuel, you know, you have God with us. The name, then, is God with us. And name and nature being the same thing, the nature of the Christ is God with us. That is number one. That must not be forgotten. The Christ is not something to be attained. It is to be realized. The Christ is that which is Emmanuel. Its name or its nature is Emmanuel, God with us. The very presence and all might of God is with us. So, above all things, remember that the first nature of the Christ is God with us. The presence and the power and the allness of divine being. The people that walk in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, the Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth even forever. The moment we have the realization of God with us, think of it now, think of the tremendousness of the realization God with us. Whether we sit here in this room, walk the street, fly in the air or beneath the sea, whether in peace or war, whether in danger or safety, or seeming security, remember that Emmanuel, or God with us, is truth, and the realization of that takes us from being the people who walked in darkness, and we have seen a great light. We have come to a great truth. we have found a great revelation. God is with us. Fullness, might is with us. Now then, for unto us a child is born. Unto us now is this revelation given. And this son, S-O-N, this son that we have received, this revelation of omnipresence, the government is now upon his shoulder, not yours or mine. Now we have the revelation of the Son of God. The Son of God, Emmanuel, God with us, that is the Son. God the Father made present as the Son, S-O-N. God the Father made evident as the Son, or realization of omnipresence, God with us. That now, upon that now, rests the government of what? Of everything pertaining to our affairs. It now takes over. I live, yet not I, Christ, this Son that has been given to us. The realization of Emmanuel now takes over, and the government is upon its shoulder. And this government, of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. Now you remember in the Infinite Way writings how many times it refers to the fact that we are not giving you, it is not giving you, the peace as the world giveth it, more health or more wealth or more homes or more cars, but it is giving my peace. My peace. My peace give I unto you, not as the world giveth. Now, the increase of his peace, that might be, and his government, there shall be no end. So that the greater our realization of Emmanuel, God with us as the Son, the Father made evident as the Son, the greater will his peace be and his government. Now then, what is the nature of this government and peace? There we have it. It is called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. There are the attributes. There are the ways of its working. The Mighty God, a God of might, a God of power, not a power of destruction to anything, a God of power to maintain its own integrity, a power of God to maintain its own universe, not a power that is to be wielded upon something, not a power that goes around swashbuckling, not a power with which we threaten something or somebody. The Mighty God, the God of might, is the God that maintains and sustains its own image and likeness with no interference. Counselor, guide, director, advisor. The Everlasting Father, creative principle, protective influence, and the Prince of Peace. As we take those words into meditation, we see the various facets of the nature of this Son of God that abides within our consciousness, the Son. And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, the branch shall grow out of his roots, and the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord, and shall make him of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness shall he judge the poor. And as I said last night, that is the basis of the entire Infinite Way healing principle. This judging righteous judgment, this ability to look at this world and not see it with the eyes, not see what the eyes see or hear what the ears hear, but with this inner eye and this inner ear, spiritually discern or perceive righteous judgment. Now then, it is not you or I who have the power to judge righteous judgment. It is not you or I who ever developed the power. It is the power of this Christ, divine sonship, this spirit of understanding within us. The spirit of the Lord shall rest upon our consciousness. The spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. This it is that judges righteous judgment, this spirit of wisdom in us called the Christ, so that instead of putting our labels out here of good and bad, sick or well, instead of trying to remove sin, disease, death, lack, or limitation, instead of accepting the appearance of the eyes or the ears, our function is to realize, since the nature of God is good, that that isness is here. Then to develop that moment of silence that the spirit of wisdom and the spirit of understanding may operate in our consciousness and reveal to us that which is there. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And so it is that as this Christ is given opportunity within us, it will judge, it will reveal the divine harmony right where the apparent discord seems to be. It will reveal the spiritual nature of the universe. It will pierce the veil of illusion. It will pierce right through this dense cloud, that which has been called the cloud of unknowing, and will reveal to us that which is. Now, never, never believe for a moment that we will develop the ability to look at error and see there or understand there the nature of spiritual reality. That is not given to us. That is a function of the Christ. We develop the ability to listen for that still small voice, to turn within, and in a moment of silence, let this Spirit of God within us be the light that reveals. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. And here you have it in its fullness, the nature of the Christ. Now you will see that it is the human mind that has placed Adam, gave the name. Adam gave the nature to creation and called some things venomous, some things poisonous, and some things destructive, and other things good. But now you will see that as you withdraw your concept of a wolf or a lion, and face it, just with the realization of the is, that the Christ, the spirit of counsel within us, of understanding, will then reveal to us the nature of the lamb and the lion as God's image and likeness, as the lamb or lion that God created, not the concept of a lamb or lion that we entertain. But when we see the wolf and the lion, rather, when we see the wolf and the lion as made in the image and likeness of God, as true in their spiritual integrity, then we will behold that the Lamb can lie down with them, and that even a little child can walk among them and lead them hither and yon. Whether or not that is Isaiah's exact meaning, we will leave to him and leave to yourselves to have revealed you. But in my vision, as I see it, God has created this universe. And in accord with the statement in Genesis, all that he created is good. And there is a wolf and there is a lion made in the image and likeness of God, which is brought to light by this Christ vision of it, as it is in proportion as we no longer judge from appearances, but learn to judge righteous judgment. Now, I have never come face to face with a lion, or with a tiger, or with a wolf, so as to give you any experience of that nature, but I have come face to face with cats and dogs that chased and killed birds. And I have watched them lose that nature and never again even look in the direction of a bird when one was around. I've witnessed it not once or twice or three times, but over and over in 20 years and coming into homes and living in the country in Massachusetts. Watched it over and over that the natural instinct of a cat or a dog is to go after birds. But that is not their natural instinct in Christ. Since the moment this realization has been brought to bear, they lost those characteristics. In the same way that I have witnessed that the moment a cat or a dog or a bird was brought under spiritual treatment, they not only knew they had received the treatment, but knew who gave the treatment, and immediately came and was with them. Now, all of this is, after you've seen enough of it, proof positive that the nature of a cat or a dog or a wolf or a lion is only that which is conferred on them by human opinion, concept, or acceptance, and that all of this changes when they are brought into this Christ realization. It is in the same wise that I have seen poison ivy and poison oak, the infection from poison ivy and poison oak, healed only through the realization of the same thing, that whereas judging from appearances, this ivy and oak is poisonous. Seen through this Christ vision, there is only one planting, and that is God's planting, and God giveth the increase in that planting, and does not add to it destruction or harm. And I have seen the most remarkable and quick healings of these effects of poison. Another thing I have witnessed so often as to convince me that it is not accidental, and that is that wherever this understanding is brought to bear, the ordinary pest life in country and in cities disappears from homes. Those things that we have been troubled with as mosquitoes and ants and roaches, and other household pests, as they're called, and cutthroat pests, that these disappear and find their rightful place. I do not believe that they are destructive. I do not believe that they are filth carriers in God's vision. In God's vision, they have some place, but you will never find that place judging after appearances. It will only be in proportion as you meditate and this inner thing brings the sense of reality to you that all of a sudden these things disappear from your sight. And it certainly doesn't mean that you've destroyed them, but that your true vision of them establishes them again. The government is upon his shoulder, and this government then restores them to their rightful activity and rightful place. The point of all this, you can clearly see, is this, that as long as you are judging after appearances, you will have the world's concept of wolves and of lions and of ants and of roaches and of rats and of all these other things. But the moment that you make way for his understanding, for his wisdom, for the spirit of wisdom to come to you, it will reveal to you the divine harmony. Now, in this way does Isaiah reveal the prophecy of the Christ coming and the very nature of the Christ when it comes. It was on this point that the Hebrews lost their entire demonstration. The Hebrews, of course, had also expected the Messiah long before Isaiah. But certainly they looked for a different kind of Messiah and for a different kind of power. They did not get what they were seeking, and they couldn't accept what they got. We today, if this Christ is to be revealed universally, must first of all know the nature of the Christ and what it is we seek. What is the nature of that which dwells among us, God with us? What is the nature of that, and what is its function and purpose in our experience? As long as it is thought of as something with which to heal disease, or get rid of obnoxious friends or pests, as long as it is thought of as something that we can utilize for a personal good, in that degree, or as long as we think of it as a power to be used over other forms of power, in that degree will we make the old Hebrew mistake and we will lose the Christ. We must return to Isaiah for his gift of prophecy and learn of the nature of the Christ as Counselor, as the Everlasting Father, as the Prince of Peace, as the Spirit of Wisdom, the Spirit of Knowledge, the Spirit of Intuition. And as we learn of the Christ of that, then it can function through us as that very Spirit. Then the Christ will be revealed as a Revelator. The Christ will be revealed as a Revealer of divine harmonies, not a destroyer of inharmonies, a revealer of divine harmonies, of a spiritual kingdom right here on earth. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. Those who seek even to use the Christ as a force will, of course, lose their demonstration in that degree. Only by seeing the Christ as a spirit of wisdom, a spirit of guidance, a spirit of love, a Prince of Peace, the activity of divine government on earth, only in that degree will it become available to us in our experience. Then, in that degree, as human consciousness reaches back to it, it will take over the government of our immediate experience. Surely, when the reign of God is completely realized on earth, it will then be a continuous experience like that of Paul's, when he says, I live, yet not I. In other words, the time has now come when the Christ isn't an intermittent experience, just brought to light in some time of need, but where no longer do times of need arise since by now the government has been entirely relinquished onto its shoulder. But that is a matter of individual demonstration. At first, those who learn to develop this listening ear find the Christ available as divine counsel, wisdom, guidance, direction, protection, supply, as the need arises. But a step further comes as this becomes more and more, shall we say, habitual, that then there is no longer a looking back. There isn't anybody to look back. The government has taken over, and its expression is always a day or two before any need can arise. So that no longer do these needs arise, life becomes an harmonious functioning of it. You will find that in proportion as this happens, you do not become lost in spirit or absorbed in it, nor does the function of life become less individual or joyous or original. That is the fear that many express, that it will make a sort of Pollyanna life, or something like going to heaven and sitting on a cloud with a harp, and we never did like harps anyhow. But that is not so. This experience of the Christ intensifies every avenue of life. It makes every department of life more enjoyable, and makes every activity more original, and it makes every art and every ability more intense. Undoubtedly, however, it does take from us the ability to fail. I have put my spirit upon you. I have given you the spirit of wisdom, of understanding, of Christ. But now, I, God speaking to us, but now comes the necessity for our opening consciousness to it. Let us not forget that this has been a truth since before Abraham. And when God says, I have put my spirit upon you, I have put the spirit of understanding upon you, he doesn't mean that he did it 2,000 years ago or that he is doing it here today, but that that is the gift that was given us, the gift of Emmanuel, God with us, from the beginning of time, but which we, through this fall of man or prodigal experience, have ignored. It is our greatest asset and the one unknown to us, entirely unknown, as humans. And of course, the mistake of religion has been to attach this Spirit of God to an individual here or there, to agree that Moses had it, and Elijah had it, Jesus had it, Paul had it, but that they were especially divinely inspired of God, or as I read lately, that the reason Moses and Elijah and Jesus and Paul had it was that they were such good members of the Roman Catholic Church that through their membership in the church it was conferred upon them, in which case we will have an infinite way church and receive the divine blessing. No, I have put my spirit upon you. That is God's grace unto its own. God has appeared. God the Father has appeared as the Son. Our ignorance of that has deprived us of our sonship, divine sonship. It has deprived us of our heritage, of all that the Father had. And it is only now, as it was then, that in the realization of this, that we return to the Father's house and are satisfied to partake of the Father's glory and the Father's grace, rather than claim a glory or grace of our own, separate and apart from the Godhead. Now we have seen the prophecy of the Christ, and you yourself will follow that through Isaiah, and we have seen the nature of the Christ. Ultimately, we come to the fulfillment. And there we learn the nature of the fulfillment of the Christ. And this also is in Isaiah 60. Arise, shine, for thy light has come. The glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But the Lord shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Lift up thine eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together, they come to thee. Thy sons shall come from far, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side. Then thou shalt see, and flow together. And thine heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto thee. The forces of the Gentiles shall come unto thee. The multitude of camels shall cover thee, the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah. All they from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense. They shall show forth the praises of the Lord. And the sons of strangers shall build up thy walls, and their kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee, but in my favor have I had mercy on thee. Therefore thy gates shall be open continually. They shall not be shut day or night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the nation and kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish. Yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. The glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together, to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. In our humanhood, we had this darkness, and in our humanhood, we had what would appear to be the curse of God, the lack of favor of God. But now in this light, in this realization and revelation of Emmanuel, or God with us, in this illumined consciousness, now this good flows. But remember yesterday, it isn't flowing to us, it is flowing to the Christ. And so, wherever this Christ is, wherever an individual who is in darkness opens his eyes and turns to the God, the Son of God, within That is where the good, the safety, the protection, the security, the counsel, the guidance will flow. It will flow to the Son of God. It will flow to the Christ. It will flow wherever consciousness is opened and attuned to the presence of God with us. So let this be clear. Always, the Christ is drawing unto itself the glories of God, for the simple reason that the Christ is the God itself as individual being. And wherever that Christ is, all men must serve it. All lesser ideas, all those things that are meant to be the servants of the Christ must serve it. They must bring the silver and gold to it. They must bring honor, fame, and glory to it. For that is the function of the Christ, to be the showing forth of the full glory of the Godhead in any and in every form. So wherever the Christ appears in human consciousness, there you will find that that individual is lifted above lack or limitation, above the sins of the world, the diseases of the world, the fears of the world, the discords and inharmonies of the world, until, rising in the full glory of it, there are no more earthly kingdoms, temporal kingdoms. These have all been set underfoot. These have all disappeared as shadows disappear in the light. And so then, to the Son of God flows and fulfills the allness of God. The Son of God attracts unto itself the fulfillment of nature, so that even the storms at sea are quieted, so that opacity loses its nature, so that all that is not of God is made to appear as non-existent, as having no being, no presence. Then comes the full realization, when it appears as it did to Paul, that I live, yet not I, Christ liveth my life. It is then as if we were the beholder watching these divine harmonies. True, there is a struggle first. There is the struggle within our own being. And you find this in the New Testament. Many people believe that Jesus had three great temptations. He had many more than that, because we are told that Satan left him for a season. Satan had a way of returning to the master. Satan had a way of returning to the master all the way up to Gethsemane, and probably at Golgotha, and probably in the tomb. The temptations never cease until the full Christhood is arisen in our consciousness. It makes no difference what form of discord remains in our experience. It is only there as a temptation until the full Christ is risen, until the realization of the full Christhood appears. The Master exemplifies this in the ascension, in the rising up into the clouds, as an ascending above the limits of earth. And so it is with us. Only in proportion as we are lifted up do we rise above the discords and inharmonies, and those that remain are our temptations. And these temptations continue, and they appear as inner conflicts as much as they appear as externalized persons and conditions. At first, they appear as externalized persons and conditions to be overcome. Later, they appear as inner conflicts within our own being when we, having glimpsed the nature of the Christ, realize our human deficiencies. When we begin to realize how far we are from the vision of ourselves that we have beheld. When we have once glimpsed the divine perfection of our sonship, and then each day have to witness ourselves lose our temper or indulge in some lustful thinking not rightfully ours under even human conditions, and in otherwise fear discords of this world, in that measure do the temptations come as inner conflicts, and they must be resolved within our own consciousness. These are not things that can be met outwardly, nor can they be met for us. These some things can be met for us, especially in the earliest stages of our journey. But in the last analysis, the greater temptations that come to us, to understand that the honors and fame and glory that comes are not those of ourselves, but of God, of Christ, that the wealth that comes to us is not ours, but of Christ, to understand that these healings and harmonies do not come because of our understanding, but because of the spirit of understanding within us, which is a quality of that Christ. And in that degree are these conflicts met and bit by bit risen above. And of course, I have no way of telling when the final release comes, nor what its nature is when it comes, because some of those conflicts are still mine. Remember this week's work, the prophecy of the Christ, the nature of the Christ, as we must understand it in order fully to benefit by it, and then the nature of the fulfillment of the Christ, what to look for and what to expect, and how to determine our progress through that understanding. All of these are found in Isaiah, and in the mission of and the message of the Master. You will find that the Master uses the same terms as Isaiah of the government, of my peace, of my kingdom, and all indicative of the great truth that there is a kingdom of the soul. There is a kingdom of spirit that in its time, through the realization of this Christ, displaces the kingdom of earth, the reign of earth, the government of mortal being and mortal seeming. Imagine how it would seem, how it would be, if in this very moment, in any moment of discord or in harmony, it were possible just to turn consciousness within, turn thought within for a fleeting second, to recognize Emmanuel, God with us, as the Son of God in consciousness, and instantly to feel a release of warmth, of gentleness, of truth. To immediately hear the still small voice with its assurance of divine presence. And then you will know the experiences that lie ahead as this meditation and pondering on the nature, mission, function of the Christ will bring about in your experience. But remember that in proportion as this spiritual capacity develops within you, to keep ever more silent about it, not telling it to human beings. They can't receive it, no matter how true it is. Divulging it only step by step, milk to babes, until you can impart it to the receptive consciousness, feeling no call upon you to change the world overnight, feeling no call to save the world. It can't be saved. It can't be saved from without. It can only be saved from within. And it can only be saved as each one is ready to abandon their outer reliances and receive the grace from within and the peace from within. In all the literature of the world today, you will find the demand is for security and peace. The two things the world seeks madly today, security and peace. The tragedy is the world will never find security nor peace. The world is seeking security and peace in ways in which it cannot be found in places where it doesn't exist. There is no such thing as security or peace, not to be found in covenants, agreements, cartels, business arrangements, political meetings, or leagues. There is no such thing as security or peace in the outer realm, because the same men that make them can break them, or their sons or their sons' sons. Ultimately, the government is upon his shoulder, and peace can only come from the Prince of Peace. The Prince of Peace is Emmanuel. The realization of God with us. In the realization of God with us, we have our own Prince of Peace. We have our own spiritual government. And we have our own counselor and our own Almighty Father. We have all this in the realization of Emmanuel, God with us, divine grace, always at hand. Now, inasmuch as we cannot give this to the natural man because he cannot receive it, let us accept it within our consciousness and become the light of the world. As we become the light unto our own world, and as we watch the gold and silver, the name and fame and fortune, and lands and cattle and all forms of good being brought to us, and recognize that it is coming to us not by virtue of ourselves, but by virtue of our realization of this Emmanuel or Christ, in that degree then, does the world turn and say, what is it you have? And those who are already to acknowledge they have not found peace of mind in right thinking, or peace of mind in covenant, they're ready to forsake their dependence in the outer. To them can you reveal this inner. While you are doing this, a miracle happens. People who are inwardly, spiritually attuned, but have never heard of you or of me, have never heard of the infinite way, and probably not even heard of Christianity, will open their consciousness to something greater than themselves, and they will touch this very Emmanuel, because it exists at the center of their being as it does at the center of our being.